another episode of the American Revolution podcast. Now, I'm sorry for the delay in episodes, but last week I was upstate in Saratoga Battlefield for our annual Artificers Weekend. The Artificers Weekend is a living history weekend where we display the various craftspeople that would have been with the Continental Army during the time of the battle. We have a tailor, blacksmith, carpenters, tinsmith, a gentleman doing gunsmithing. There was also someone doing ammo creation. We had a fabulous turnout. There were so many visitors. It was a very active weekend, and we had a great time doing it. Of course, I do have to give some credit to myself and the other volunteer, Matt, who were working as carpenters. We were actually able to get two very big projects done. The first being the tiller arm for the Fort Stanwyck Forge. That was a big deal. It took us a couple of days, but we got it retrofitted and everything's ready to go. We also completed the worm for the cannon. Now, I'm going to get more into artillery tools in a later episode, but just so you have an idea of what I'm talking about, it's the screw-like tool that they put down a cannon after it's been fired to clear any debris out. On a personal note, I was able to finish a hammer handle for a broken hammer that I had. That was good. I have now a complete set of hammers, so I give myself a personal high five for that. Our tinsmith Ranger Bill had a great weekend. A lot of crowds at his tent. He was very active with the guests. It was good to see. Our tailors, Ranger Eric and Ranger Megan, had a good weekend. I was talking to Ranger Eric. He said it was great. I got a lot accomplished. I was very happy with it. The volunteer Don doing the ammo display always had a crowd at his tent. You know, he gives a great talk. Volunteer Don does a great job of, you know, talking about his craft whenever anyone's around, and he does a great little segment. Volunteer Kevin was there on Sunday doing gunsmithing. He had a decent sized crowd. Our blacksmiths are always popular. Of course, our master blacksmith, who's a volunteer, Chris, his apprentice, young Jude, who were doing some various works, different types of little projects, also fixing the forge for Fort Stanwyck. And Ranger Joe, who was also working the blacksmith station. But a big deal for him was not getting burned for once. There's been quite a few weekends in the past where he, burned some DNA off his fingertips. So, after a great weekend there, I encourage anyone next year in July, just look it up on the park website, find out when the Artificers Weekend is, and definitely go out. It's a great, great weekend. So, to begin our story, I wanted to do a discussion on the French and Indian War, but like I said, the subject is so vast. What a lot of people don't realize is the French and Indian War was as close to a world war as you can get. The French, the Indians, the American colonists, and the British colonists will battle heavily on the American continent. But what people don't realize is that the British and French were battling it out in their colonies in the Caribbean, Africa, India. The Spanish will jump in. And this war will rage for 7 long years. Now, the one interesting thing I always say about it is that it really changed the world map, but did little to change the European map. Not much territory is traded back and forth in the European continent. It's all traded out in the colonies. So how is the war started? Well, funny enough, it begins technically on July 4th, 1754, with the surrender of Fort Necessity in what is now Pennsylvania. What makes the date so ironic is who who actually surrenders the fort. The fort is surrendered by a militia colonel from Virginia, a young man in his mid-20s, a landowner, who by most rights is a decent officer. His name is George Washington. Washington will surrender the fort to 600 French and their 100 Indian allies. This is a massive blow to the English pride, and they want the fort back. When the French won't give it up, they decide it's time for war. The war will rage for 7 years, and what we will come to know as the French and Indian War is really a war on global scales. It will rage here in the continent, throughout upstate New York, Canada, the western territories of Virginia's, Pennsylvania, and the Carolinas. It will rage through the Caribbean, where islands and territories are traded back and forth between not only the French and English, but also the Spanish as well. It'll press over into the African continent and then into India. So for 7 long years, the war rages. And finally, in 1762, there's an end to the war. British claim victory, and they will have to sign a treaty, the Treaty of Paris. The Treaty of Paris, a final draft, will go to the floor of Parliament on November 29th, 1762. It outlines several areas that will change the map significantly as the way the colonies look after the war. First, Canada and all French lands that are east of the Mississippi River will belong to Britain, with the exception of New Orleans, which will remain a French port. French fishing rights in the Grand Banks are confirmed, and they will also receive the islands of Saint-Pierre and Miquelon, if I pronounce that properly. They'll use that as a commerce base. As far as the Caribbean goes, Saint Vincent, Dominica, and Tobago, along with Grenada, will all remain in British control, while the French will retain the island of Guadeloupe, Martinique, and Saint Lucia. As far as the holdings in Africa, the British will retain Senegal, and the French will be returned to Gorée, which was captured by the British. Britain had once again been given overall control of India. And as for Hanover, where the only fighting on the European continent took place, both Britain and France will withdraw military operations for or against Prince Frederick. As for the Spanish, well, they basically don't get much of anything. They're given logging rights in Honduras, and Spain has returned the island of Cuba, but they're going to lose Florida. As much as they really have to bite the bullet, Spain will sign, Britain and France unanimously agree to the terms, and on February 10th, 1763, the Treaty of Paris is signed. Now, there is an interesting side note to this. Britain gains the colony of Canada, but they give up Guadeloupe and Martinique. If they kept Guadeloupe and Martinique, which they fairly captured, the profits from the sugar trade would have eaten a huge chunk of the war debt that will come out of the war. Thus, the American colonies will not have to be taxed, and the American colonists can remain happily in the control of the British crown. Thus, they won't want to rebel for no taxation without representation, and who knows what that could do to history. So I guess there's a bonus to British control of Canada. Now, King George realizes that he has a real problem on his hands. And he needs to take this massive war debt that he's attained from the war that just took place over the last 7 years across the globe. And he has to come up with some new taxes to place on his colonies that will try and eat into their large war debt. So next week, we're going to get started into the Proclamation of 1763. It'll be signed, once again, ironically, on July 4th by King George. And this is where our story is really going to begin. It's going to start to really kick off the arguments of the colonists of no taxation without representation. It's going to show the British colonies that they are making a real mistake by angering a large and, for the most part, independent colony that, all intents and purposes, can run itself. But instead, they want to try and micromanage the colonists. And we're going to see over the next couple of weeks how these taxes really weigh on the American colonist's mind. And they really say, enough is enough, it's time for a change.
It's at this point of the episode that I like to do a little book recommendation. Something that I've read that I think the audience will really like as a source for secondary information to back up what I've talked about. And for this episode, I'm going to choose The French and Indian War, Deciding the Fate of North America by Walter R. Bornman. This book I used quite frequently when studying the French and Indian War. It is a great source to cover everything there is about the French and Indian War in the North American colonies. So for this episode, I'm definitely going to recommend that. Sometime later in this week, I will have the third episode out, and that should bring us back on track to a one a week. This is the point in the episode where I'm going to leave you guys with a book recommendation. The book I'm choosing this week is The French and Indian War, Deciding the Fate of North America. It's by Walter R. Bornman. It is a great read. I used it a lot when studying the French and Indian War. It covers everything that you will want to know about the American colonies during that time period. It starts in the 1750s with the beginning of the war, obviously, and goes until about around the Proclamation of 1763 and the lead into the American Revolution. He does a really great job of outlining the story from each various campaign. So it's really easy to follow the story. Next time, which will probably be later in the week, I'm going to have a third episode out. The third episode is going to be about the Proclamation of 1763. And then I will hopefully, if we have some time, try and knock out another Act of Parliament. My plan is to do one or two of these a week leading into the real events of the war. This way, we can kind of bypass the slow and sometimes painstaking political issues that we have to talk about because, well, it's really important to our story. But if most people are like me, they like to get into the action, so I want to try and get to the action as quick as possible. So next week, later in this week, plan for the Proclamation of 1763 and hopefully the Sugar Act, and we'll knock those two out and we'll be just that much closer to the beginning of the war. That's it for the American Revolution podcast. So till next time, always remember, keep your powder dry.